And now Iowa Contemporary Art presents ICOM Art Radio.
Hi, this is Bill Teeple, Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby, and this is ICON Art Radio. That's the radio that has art to it. Well, Donna, I'm going to pass the ball to you because you came in wanting to extend the topic that we had discussed in regard to art, and you wanted to extend it into life. So go ahead.
Well, basically, I want to talk about it in terms of the scheduling of one's days. We've talked about the balance in the studio between spontaneity and inspiration and structure. And I would like to apply that to how we get things done in the day. There are some artists who feel like they can't work unless the muse comes along and just inspires them. And there are other artists and people in any field of life who feel like the muse comes if you just show up, and that the best idea is to just be there at your computer to write or at your easel to paint at a certain time every day and just start working and something will happen. So that's the starting point. I have other aspects of this I'd like to discuss, but let's go from there.
Well, that brings up a lot for me. First of all, are we talking about the art of life?
What do we want to do? Do we want to focus on the artist, or do we want to focus on
we're not talking about artists here. I mean,
okay,
the art of life. That is someone who successfully negotiates themselves through the day and then through a lifetime, and at the end, what do we say they have achieved?
Yeah.
Have they achieved an art experience, or they have they gotten things done? I mean, and this balance, I mean, I think what you're getting at is something that deals with a balance, having achieved an equilibrium, a homeostasis of life in the day, and what is achieved there. Because I think that the person who just waits around for it to happen, there's probably a person who's that's their MO, and that's the way it works for them. And then there's the person that has to make themselves sit down and just each day work, and then it flows and happens through them. And probably it has to do with constitutions and types of individuals. But on the other hand, I think a balance of structure, just as we've talked about in the artwork, a balance of structure and life flowing through that structure and creating a structure and working within a structure for all this to happen is what we're after. And I would imagine, I mean, I would think that the end product would be art. The art of life, the art of living.
Well, I guess for me, I sort of have to use both because they do different things. Being receptive is great when, you know, there's not already some momentum that demands satisfaction. Being disciplined is also great, although I don't know what that is. Because I have none, and I envy those who know what discipline is. But there's still this you know mechanism of keeping the channel open. If you play the piano and you don't play for 6 months, it is likely to interfere with your ability to play to some extent. If you are doing something more abstract than that, like writing, for example, if I may call that more abstract, then, you know, if you go for 6 months without writing anything, you may find that you get rusty. I mean, that you don't have the stamina to sit still for half an hour, you know, to write something. So I think it's important to try and keep the channel open, and that means something at least similar to discipline, where you write about whatever as often as possible, or at least a certain minimum amount. But I do find that when the muse isn't there, it's, for me anyway, it's really easy to invite her in. And the best way to invite her in is to just shut up and sit still. And if I sit quietly in the living room with everything turned off, no TV, no background music, no nothing, and I just sit there on the couch, perhaps with my eyes closed, after 5 minutes, I'll become restless and I'll want to do something. And there will be more and more things available for me to do the longer I sit there.
That was my, when you used that example, that was my first thought was, well, if I did that, there would be 100 things I would be restless to do right at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think my problem in this whole realm is structure helps me to not have more options than I can actually deal with in any moment. Mm. Because my impulses are usually, you know, far more abundant than the time that I have to accomplish things. I had an ex-husband who was constantly telling me life is not a list. Because he was a very free-flowing guy who really wanted timelessness to be, you know, the feature of his life. And he could plunge into something and spend like 5 hours doing, forget about eating and everything else. And I was prone to dividing my day up into little chunks, making a list of now I'm going to do this, now I'm going to do that. And to him, that was hell. It's like, why would you want to live your life that way? And for a while, I started to be convinced and thought, you know, well, man, am I limiting myself by being this? Am I uptight or what's the deal? Until I realized that I tended to open up more and become more spontaneous when I looked at the schedule and said, at 10 o'clock, I'm going to work on my novel. At 2 o'clock, I'm going to paint or whatever. Because then all of the other possibilities were eliminated because I was going to do that at that time. And the muse in that category could open itself up. Otherwise, there were too many muses. There were like 100 muses, and I didn't know what to choose from.
Yeah. I guess my problem is more one of inertia, because if I have 100 ideas, but no one of them is sufficiently louder than the others to get me into motion.
Well, I think it's the same thing for me. I would wind up falling into inertia if I couldn't choose.
Yeah.
Well, she's saying her structure makes her focus on these particular subjects that she's chosen to work in.
But at some point, you have to choose which those are. At some point, you do have to prioritize and go, all right, these are the 5 things I'm going to schedule into.
But is there openness when you've scheduled? I mean, do you do the same thing within the hour also? Do you have a systematic formula that you work within, or do you sort of let it happen in that time?
Well, it depends on what I'm doing. For example, let's say working on my novel. If I just say every day I'm going to work on my novel and keep it as general as that, then each day I'm faced with, all right, am I just going to like write chapters? Am I going to like do character development? Well, then what I'm going to do that day or the next day is generated by what I just did. So let's say I just wrote half a chapter and I realize that I need to learn, this takes place in Athens, Greece. And in order to write the rest of this chapter, I have to learn more about a certain aspect of Athens, Greece. So the next day I may program in, all right, tomorrow I'm going to research Athens, Greece, and answer these questions, like an assignment in school. And that tends to work for me. When I'm actually just writing the chapters, though, that's when the muse is more relevant and, you know, I have to just see what happens because sometimes I just keep hitting dead ends and other times it's happening.
Yeah. So the time slot or the schedule is really more project-based than activity-based. In other words, 10 o'clock is when I'll work on the book rather than 10 o'clock is when I will write.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, if I have to do research, that wouldn't be at 10. In your case, that's part of the book.
Well, no,
so it
no.
Goes
it
at
could,
10.
Right. It could, it's, yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's the project. Yeah.
It's the project.
Now, and in writing, don't you sometimes have to just sit and have it start happening in your mind?
It's like always, and for me, it's always happening in my mind. I mean, it's like. Right.
But I mean, oh, okay. So that's,
I don't have writer's
block. So the book,
will,
you'll be
problem,
working on the book all day long, probably. But you have, because your mind will be going there, in the context of doing other things, and then what you're doing in the other things also gets incorporated into the book, as if I understand correctly what you're doing with your book. but then you've blocked out a particular time. Just for book.
To sit down and focus on it.
Because, this is admirable.
Because otherwise,
yeah, it certainly is.
If I don't do that, it's very
easy. I've seen you
easy.
Doing this, and yeah. I found it quite, I've envied your ability to do this.
Yeah.
Well, it's if I don't do that, what happens to my day is that somebody will call me up and say, you want to go to Iowa right. City today? I'm going to do such and such, you know. And pretty much when somebody suggests something to me, it sounds interesting. And if I don't have anything scheduled to do because I don't have an official job where I have to be there and work for somebody else, it's easy to just say yes to any interesting thing that comes along. And then at the end of the week, I feel frustrated because really I wanted to work on my book, or really I wanted to learn, practice. Right. I'm trying to learn French. And with learning to speak a foreign language, you really have to work on it every single day. You can't just do it when you feel like it, because that's just the nature of learning a language. And so that's another thing that I set aside.
I'm very familiar with the scenario. And like, I was off for 2 weeks, and I found that I didn't get as much done as I had wanted to get done because of this particular problem, because I didn't have a structure to work within. But now I'm back to my regular schedule of teaching. But that's a schedule that's imposed on me because I've structured a way of making a living. And so I think that what we're getting at here is that everyone has to figure out a balance to be achieved somehow. Because I know the biggest problem with creative people, especially artists. I mean, we're talking about life in general, but my field is the arts, so I know what it is to have 2 weeks go by, or a month, or a year, and you've really wanted to be working on a series of paintings, or a something, and or a project, or a gardening project, or something, and it's like you're sort of like, you just get started, and then things get in the way, and you get started, and things get in the way, and you look back after a year, and it hasn't happened. But I think everyone has to figure out how it works best for them to make it happen, because the difference between a successful project getting out there into the world and one not is figuring this thing out. You have to deal with physical boundaries and time boundaries and energy and money. It's all boundaries that you have to work with to make it happen.
And what your goal is, too, because the happiness factor is part of it. And because, you know, it's not just about getting things done and checking them off the list so that you can feel that I have accomplished X number of things at the end of the week. It's, why do you even want to accomplish these things? It's because those are the things that make you feel wonderful inside and expanded and thriving and more alive. And often in our lives, those things that make us feel most alive and enthusiastic about life get shoved onto the back burner by the things that we sort of feel a duty to do because somebody else has asked us to, or because somewhere along the line we felt like we had to clean the house before we could paint or something like that. So,
well, I always feel that it's a fantastic blessing when someone asks me to do something that I also like to do. Because then I'm doing it for someone else, which is ultimately more rewarding than doing it for myself. But it's also something I would have done for myself anyway, and I enjoy the process. Because for me, there's some kind of a disconnect between thought and action. I was trying to understand how thought results in action over the years, and I got far enough so that I see how thought and action are just in two completely different domains. And now I don't see how thought produces action. I haven't a clue. I don't know how I do anything. And if I sit down and think, even just for a moment, about what I'm going to do, I won't do anything. As soon as I start thinking about doing it, then, I mean, it's not on the level of planning what exactly the subtasks are or something. If I'm going to draw a picture, I know I need to go get some paper, and that's not the problem. It's the question of, shall I draw a picture? Do I want to draw a picture? Am I going to draw a picture? And at that point, action is just gone. Nothing happens. And that's why if I sit quietly and just stop thinking, then things will begin to happen on their own. And this sort of ego author of action isn't involved anymore. And then I'll just get up and start doing something. And I find out what it is that I'm going to do that way. I can't say this is what I'm going to do, because whatever plan I have seems to have no bearing on what happens.
That is so fascinating. We're all such different creatures, aren't we?
Yeah, aren't we?
It's like, for me, I think it's because I'm basically, my probably basic characteristic more than anything else is to be a student. I loved school. In fact, this is back to school time, and every year at back to school time, I envy the kids.
And you're trying to structure your life so you're back in school.
Well, basically, that's it. If I give myself assignments, give myself specific assignments, yeah, I get thrilled by them. If I write them down on a piece of paper, you know, do this, answer these questions, you know, follow this. Today, if I just say I'm going to work on my French today, it's not as inspiring to me as if I say, on Monday I'm going to work on pronouns, on Tuesday I'm going to work on prepositions, on Wednesday I'm going to work on the gender of noun. You know, that that thrills me, because somehow it takes me back to that realm where it was happy land for me being in school as a child. So
I'd be tempted to say that would be one of the most effective ways of getting me not to learn French.
Yeah, we're talking about different learning styles and patterns of getting, making things happen.
Because, I'll often start something that will spontaneously generate the need for a whole bunch of assignments. Mm-hmm. And once I know the assignments as assignments, then I don't want to do them, because it's the thought of doing them that gets my attention, instead of the, shall we say, motivation for doing them or something. Yeah. There's something invisible that gets my attention otherwise, and then I just get up and start doing the thing that needs to be done.
Well, see, this is an important point, because we each have to really tune in to what's going to work for us, because it's so easy to be influenced by some method that we read about in a book.
Yeah.
Or something that somebody else advises us to do.
Well, and people are constantly coming along and saying, this is the way to do things, and having these seminars and workshops and the way to be successful and how to do.
Yeah.
For me, it seems like the entire experience is one of, because it's a problem for me. I mean, I'm constantly dealing with it more as a problem than as a solution. And so I assume that means it's an area of life that I'm supposed to learn more about. And I think it has to do with, for me, learning how to live in the gap between awareness and conscious thinking. Because when I'm consciously thinking, that's when nothing good is going to come of it. And in fact, you know, because of the way I talk, I have a reputation as being someone who thinks about things a lot. Mm. And I don't. I don't think about things much at all unless I'm doing something. And the thoughts that you get if you jiggle me are just there when you jiggle me. If you stop bumping into me, I stop talking.
So action generates thought to you rather than the other way around.
Yes.
Well, you respond to a stimulus then.
There's a stimulus of some kind that's not verbal. It's not consciously mental. And so, you know, if I think, gosh, is this a good time to take a shower? The answer will be no, course not. It's never a good time to do anything that I ask that question about. Is this a good time to, you know, go to the movies? No. Is this a
good
time to drive the
car? No. Because you then get sunk into some kind of an abstract philosophy realm that
makes action impossible? Yeah, I think it's because the question itself is sort of paralyzing because it's baseless.
No, I'm very familiar with this scenario, and a lot of creative types run into this problem. And that's that they get themselves paralyzed by wondering whether the act that they're about to perform is worthy of performance or should be performed or any other kind of reason.
Yeah.
I got myself totally wound up into, because I want to know the truth, and so truth has driven all of my artistic activities. I don't see any reason to do anything.
Right.
So I have to find a reason. I had to, let me put it this way. For many years, I had to know for sure was what I was after, which was ridiculous, that what I was doing would be the highest, the most beneficial to as to the maximum level of universe before I could do it, you see. Mm. Now, I'm naturally a creative manifester person that does stuff, so that doesn't come natural. But there was somehow I got myself into this place of asking the question, is it the best move, before I could move. And it isn't natural, but I got myself into this place that he's describing. And once you start asking those questions, you get paralyzed because you can't move.
Yeah.
So what I have had to do and what I've been practicing in the last decade, especially since I came here and started doing things. I mean, I freed myself from this by just saying, I'm not going to say a word I can't say on the radio, but I sort of basically said, forget this.
Yeah.
I'm going to stand right where I am and respond to what comes in front of me and just see what happens with direct, natural response, as opposed to creating this like in between thing that wonders whether this is the best thing, best response, you know, because that you get frozen.
Well, what got me in deep trouble in this case was becoming fascinated with the mechanics of the performance of action. I was asking myself, who is performing the action? And I couldn't answer that question, but that made all actions, as soon as I thought of them as actions instead of simply doing them, it turned them all into, you know, these vast imponderable paradoxes, and I'm kind of still there. So, I mean, to me, it's the Nike shoe commercial is the best advice available for me, which is, you know, just do it. And as soon as I'm not doing it, as soon as I'm thinking about doing it, it's over. I should just sit down on the floor and close my eyes for a few seconds and cease to exist. And then I'll get up and just do something. And it always turns out to be fine. It's what needed to be done. You know, the things that come up are the things that are pressing, that the environment demands or my life demands or my work demands, you know.
So I think for our next show, what seems to be generating here is this other question about how much of life do we actually create and generate, and how much of life is generated by responding to something.
Well, that's, there we have the question of free will and predestination.
we also have the question, the pursuit of which paralyzed me. It's a question I might find.
Maybe we can get her paralyzed.
Suggesting.
This is a good thing. Let's see whether we just.
But let me say. Let me bring up something
time.
That's from the past that I knew something about once, and it was swordsmanship, because I found that Japanese. What did I just say? Zen swordsmanship. I don't know
something
what I just
like
said.
That. Something swordsmanship.
Zen swordsmanship. That is. I was making a lot of parallels with action and performing action and making art with Japanese culture and what was happening there. And one of the things was Japanese swordsmanship. And there's this thing of the stopping of the mind and the non-stopping of the mind. And there was this thing called a khufu, I think it was called. It's where you stop the mind. Mm. And instead of responding, if you stop in the middle of parrying the other person's sword play with you, you're dead.
Yeah.
So there, it has to be the non-stopping mind is the idea. And you step back and you watch yourself parrying every move that comes at you. Mm-hmm. And then it ends. The perfect ending in that relationship is like a tie. Like you either mm-hmm. it's either mutual annihilation or never annihilating each other.
Yeah, yeah. Exhaustion, I guess. Well, it's a challenging metaphysical question, and it's interesting that we would even, you know, be so involved in something so abstract that it could be, you know, relevant in a meaningful day-to-day activity kind of context. That something this fundamentally abstract should have so much influence over our ability to do something.
See, I think for me, abstraction is more of a fun thing to do rather than a real thing. In other words, I've never experienced what you both are talking about, getting to some point of philosophical abstraction where I'm paralyzed from action, because going down some track of abstract thinking to me is just like some exciting thing to do. And I don't think I've ever asked myself to, in the way that you have, why am I doing this, or is this a worthy thing to do, or whatever. It's worthy to me because this is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is stimulating. This thought is leading to the next thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not like, you apparently have not found yourself engulfed in doubt.
No.
Ever. This is exceptionally good.
Yeah, very interesting juxtaposition of worldviews.
So we'll jump off next time and see where we go.
Yeah, I'm already looking forward to next week.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.